Welcome to Red Inca. I'm Jared Kimber.
This episode of Red Inca, we take a trip around the 2023 World Cup. For that, we have an expert as our tour guide.
Aditya Iyer, sports editor of Open Magazine. I also write human interest features and other funky stuff, including like the wildebeest migration in the Masai Mara. So it's not just cricket, but cricket is my focus right now on this podcast, because I've written a book called Gali Gali, Travels Around India During the 2023 World Cup, published by Penguin Random House. And that's what I'm here to talk to you about.
We talk Bollywood, Dhoni, daughters, monks, Koshis, and what Indian cricket fandom really means. Why did you write the book?
I have been fascinated by the idea of cricket fandom in this country. What makes cricket anywhere in the world, right? Like, you've been lucky enough to travel the world and write your stuff from absolutely everywhere. Can you imagine this sport, this most amazing sport, born in England and played in about 15, 20 countries now, without Indian fandom, right? Like, it's just not the same. So, and oftentimes, the fans in India, as you know, I mean, they can really divide a room, but they've not been given the credit for what they really bring to the table with respect to cricket. So I wanted to kind of like turn the lens towards them and see how they behave when the biggest prize in the sport, the 50-over World Cup, is hosted by the country that kind of, you know, holds the soul of this game. And they were also traveling the length and breadth of this country. And this country, as you know, is many, many different countries in one, just under the title, the banner of India. So what these different regions behave like while this amazing tournament kind of passes through like a circus, how it kind of, at the end of the day, we're a very divided country, like most democracies are. And this is one of the very, very, very few unifying factors, this game, right? I mean, there's Bollywood, there's food, but they get a bit niche, they get a bit regional, not cricket. So I wanted to see how the fans react when a big tournament happens. I didn't know that this Indian team was going to play as well as it did. That was a bonus to see how they react when something so amazing happens, and also something so heartbreaking with the loss to Australia, of course, in the final. But I wanted to see how it unifies us, how it divides us. It was basically an excuse for me to write about this country. That's what I really wanted to do. So it's just a way of telling the story of India, is what it is.
Indian fans, it's really interesting. So people often say, are Indian fans the most annoying? And I was like, no, the most annoying fans are generally, I find, West Indian fans really hard to deal with, right? But really? there's like seven of them. Do you know what I mean? So it doesn't matter. There just isn't the number that you get. And with India, you get a million great fans and a million terrible fans and a million casual fans and a million Kohli fans. It's not the same kind of thing. And you know, I've had this real issue with the cricket boards of like the Cricket Australia and the ECB and BCCI kind of pretend like they're so well run and that's why cricket has been. And it's like, no, it's to do with marketplace and people, right? And when it comes to the reason that Indian cricket is the biggest in the world is because of Indian cricket fans. And that is the most important part of it. But I want to talk to you a little bit, because your book's really interesting. It goes in a few different things. One of this, and I've been going through this in the last couple of days with Bayram, who's had trouble getting accreditation for the tournament. And I've had all sorts of trouble, especially since leaving Crick Info, for getting accreditation.
Yeah.
You focus on this quite a bit, of how to cover the World Cup and how accreditation works and what it's like not being one of the major newspapers or news outlets.
Yeah. So I basically, I've seen both ends of it, right? Like I was once with the big newspapers of two out of the three big ones. Started off with the Indian Express, where it was super easy to to get into all the big tournaments, including FIFA World Cups, man. I covered Brazil when there were actually like people from reporters from and big reporters from Argentina who kind of had to sit out of the Maracana in the final while I just walked in because, you know, they wanted representation from all over the world. And it also means we're bankrolled by these big guys. So we don't really have to worry about like tour expenses and where we stay and stuff like that. It all changes when you're not with, and, you know, because we're talking cricket here, with one of the big newspapers or a cricket website, right? A hardcore cricket website. I work for a political weekly, which comes like way down the pecking order of importance to occupy one of the seats in our tiny little press boxes in the stadiums in India. So I just wanted to, I've also wanted to talk about how similar the journey of covering cricket and getting from stadium to stadium in this expanse of India is to actually, you know, following the team as a fan. I mean, it's terribly difficult because of the distances or like the quick turnaround time. Like, you know, in this World Cup, there was a match in two back-to-back India matches in two tier two cities, in Pune, where we played Bangladesh. And in 3 days, we were playing New Zealand in Dharamshala. Now, can you imagine all that it takes for like a hardcore fan to get from there to there, right? Like, you know,
I covered the 2016 or 2017 series, whenever that was, and they had a test in Ranchi, and 3 days later, a test in Dharamshala. And it was just like, I remember the Australian fans going, can we even get between these two places in that time? And the Ranchi test went 5 days as well. So they didn't even get extra days. So I'm with you, and I've done it before. That's horrible.
That's right. So I was just like, you know, it's exactly as difficult. And just the way it's tough for the fan to like really get into the stadium, because, I mean, demand and supply, you have 60,000 tickets at best, or 120. We'll come to that later in Ahmedabad. But even that is not as much as whatever, you know, the supply is 120,000 tickets. The demand is what, like, 500,000. I mean, to keep the number real, it's impossible, right? So, and it's very similar for a person who's trying to get an accreditation or a match day seat with one of these smaller outlets. So, yeah, I was writing about the fans, it also kind of made sense. It's not like it wasn't by design, but I was like, I'm suffering just like them, man. I may as well write about what I'm going through, because it's
also
reflecting what they're going through.
I've written about fans before, and sometimes I think it's better to sit outside of the press box than inside the press box. But the problem is they won't let you bring a laptop in unless you've got an accreditation. So even in your case, you're like, oh, it would be better. But the only way to do it is to go in with like a notepad and your phone and recording stuff. Like, you have to be in the press box, not to mention little things that people don't think about, which is, if the reason that press get free food is not because they're pampered, it's because I've been to, you and I have probably both covered games where there isn't free food for the press.
Yeah.
You don't know when to go. If you line up during the break, everyone in the ground's lining up during the break. So you might miss the start of the game. And if you go during the game, then you're missing the game as well. So in every way it helps. But the thing is that, especially for World Cups now, it's getting harder and harder just to get a seat in the room, right? Yep. And then and what you end up doing is, like, I've been doing this, as I said, for Bayram recently. You end up having to call in contacts. You end up having to pull favors in for very, very basic things. Like, I should obviously be in this press box because of, you know, the audience that I'm covering or the story that I'm covering. And that's not how you get in the press box. It literally is. I've got a list of contacts here that are all people who do accreditation, because, as you might know, they actually go around the world quite a lot and they do all these different tournaments. So I've never had a phone number from someone who does accreditation in cricket without keeping it in my phone, because they might be doing the next tournament. So you need to know all these. And sometimes I have to call like really important people and go, I know this is well beneath you, but I can't get in the press box.
You know, so forget food, right? Like, the Pune press box at this World Cup, the media center didn't have a loo. So the Bangladeshi reporters and the Indian reporters had to line up. I've written it in the book. We had to line up with the public in...
Is that the one out the back? It's like you walk down the stairs and go... Yeah, no, I remember that when I was at Pune, right? And you couldn't go to the toilet during the break because everyone was in... Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. I thought they would... Because at that stage, I was like, well, they haven't built it yet, but they will. But apparently, no.
They haven't. So
the WACA used to have one toilet and like the whole press box would run for it at every break.
Yeah. But imagine queuing up with like 16,000 fans in like one bay or whatever, right? Like, because we all end up going during the drinks break, some to the concession stands, but most of us to like the loo to pee. And by the time we're out, like five overs have passed. So
No, it's mad. The whole thing's mad. There's a couple of great stories in this. One is about MS Dhoni and his super fan. And a young girl, I might mispronounce this. I don't think I've seen this name before, but is it Dia?
Yeah, that's his daughter's name. That's right.
So take us through that.
Oh, yeah. So that's the thing, right? While wanting to write about this country, I thought it'll be fantastic to, or I'll strike gold if I meet people who are in the periphery of cricket. I don't mean like, you know, normal fans. I mean, people like ex-players who didn't play too many games or people who call themselves super fans. Periphery of cricket was important to me because, you know, they can't do without cricket, but cricket can very well do without them, right? They like this machinery will move on. But they tell me the story of their passion, which is representative of fans all around. And they also tell me the story of the land they're from. I mean, they kind of like, you know, serve this dual role. And in Chennai, where India's first match was against Australia, I was lucky enough to meet this this Dhoni super fan, this CSK fan, right?
Is he the guy that dresses up as Dhoni at the grounds? Is it that guy?
Yes. No, so he's got Dhoni's name written on him, but he basically paints himself from head to toe in yellow.
Yeah,
he's got
like that guy. Yeah,
belly, and he like very meticulously gets like the title sponsor of CSK painted on him on match day. It takes about 7 hours or something like that, right? And you know, he looks like a yesteryear matinee star from Tamil Nadu, from Chennai, and very representative of this state love for celebrities, because you know what happens with Rajinikanth, who's like the big star over here, right? Like they literally pour like liters and liters of milk on like his cardboard cutouts on the day his movie is released, and that's just like skimming the surface. Anyway, so I meet this guy, and I immediately get a sense of his fanaticism, and it's very hard not to judge, but you know, you can't. So he tells me this, he tells me many wonderful stories, but the greatest of them all is, he goes like, so the day my daughter was born, I messaged Dhoni's manager saying, you know, my child's been born, and I just want, please convey this message to Dhoni. And the manager ends up telling him that, hey, you know what, this is crazy, but Dhoni's actually here in Chennai. It was just like an exchange of messages, nothing more. This guy abandons his wife, who's just given birth to his two-hour-old child, and runs to the hotel in which Dhoni is residing in, gets Dhoni out, and goes like, my daughter's born, I need your blessings. And Dhoni's like, no, can you please just go back to the maternity ward? Like, what the hell? And he goes like, I refuse to do this because you're my God, and prostrates in front of him, holds his feet and says, I will not leave till you give me a name. And he also puts a condition on this. He goes like, the name has to start with D because your name starts with D. And Dhoni on the spot thinks of something, tells him Dia, and then he goes like, thank you, and then he leaves, right? So it's just, I mean, yeah, where else do you get such stories, Jared?
So I don't have a story that good, and it's a ridiculous story, that one. I really enjoyed it, but it reminded me of during the 2015 World Cup, you're traveling around in the World Cup, and in front of me is Rod Marsh, right?
Yeah.
And I think he just shaved his mustache. So he didn't look like Rod Marsh. And also, Rod Marsh, probably not a particularly famous cricketer in India. You know, didn't play all that much over there or anything. The plane stops, and like there's a bunch of Indians at the back of the plane, and in business class it's boycott, right? And the plane stops, and there's like this 42-year-old dad right? Indian super fan, Indian shirt on and everything. The plane stopped, takes his seatbelt off and just runs up. Now, Rod Marsh, surprisingly spry, gets up almost as quickly and starts to get his bag down and everything. And this guy's trying to get through. And Rod Marsh realizes what's happening. And I don't know if you ever came across Rod, but not, he's the sort of person that would go out of his way to be difficult to this sort of a person, right? And also, this guy is being rude. He's pushing and shoving and whatever. And Rod's going, look, you can catch up with him when we get off the flight. Just chill, right? I don't think Rod Marsh ever used the word just chill, but that kind of said, he probably said, settle the fuck down, mate. But I can't remember the full words. And this guy climbs over the chairs and over Rod Marsh's shoulder. And I honestly thought Rod Marsh was going to fucking punch him, but I don't think he could reach him because the guy was like on his shoulder and went past. And you're just like, it's not a normal level of fandom, is it? Like, who has ever wanted to meet Jeffrey Boycott that much? Like, you, when you read the story about, you know, Dia's dad, and you just like, and then you look at him, and I've seen him in the ground with the, you know, the big belly and the yellow and everything. And I'm like, to me, that's extreme. And then you're like, well, of course he would be that extreme in every facet of his life, right? And that is, it's a big part of what Indian fandom is. Like, you know, you and I would have 1,000 stories of, I remember coming out of Lourdes once and trying to get in a taxi. Coming out of Lourdes with Rahul Dravid because we'd recorded together and I was walking to the tube and he was getting in a car and there was like 8 fans there. And I thought, oh, great. They're not going to hassle him too much. And then they just start to get in the in his car with him.
Yeah.
And you know that ad where Rahul Dravid gets really angry in the road rage? I saw that happen in real life. As I thought Rahul Dravid was going to kick this dude out of the onto the road. Rightly, again, completely rightly, but it's just not something that you see in other situations, is it? It really, and it has to be lived to be believed. Like if you're in an airport and the Indian team come into the airport, the whole airport shuts down and you can hear the chants and all sorts of things. It really is a completely different world. Cricket media used to be pretty simple. Find your favourite newspaper, head to Cricket Info, and maybe a blog you'd like. Now just finding the best stories and writing is a huge challenge. You already have a job. You just want to read about cricket. Well, that is what the best of cricket is currently doing. They go out daily to find the newest cricket coverage and the best stories from any publication in the world. And when they can't discover what they want, they also hire some of the best writers to produce their own great stories. You can get the best of cricket via their website or on WhatsApp. They find cricket's best stories and give them to you every day.
But it's very symptomatic of our society, right? I mean, it's just it derives from the fact that we have so many people. So even as fans, we're just constantly trying to stand out because at the end of the day, I mean, like, you know, we're just like 60,000 faceless, nameless people in a stadium. How do I get the camera pointed towards me? How do I get the players to know that I like you more than the guy sitting next to me likes you? Right. So it's obviously like because of this, and I know it's like a larger talking point and a real disease these days, which is, like the fan wars online. That's what it's kind of like gravitated towards. There's a big reason why these people like identify as Rohit fans or Virat fans, or when India lost the 2023 World Cup, you saw all these Virat fans going like, of course, this is going to happen when you have Rohit as captain. And this all kind of like, you know, just stems from the same place, which is how do we stand out? How do we not remain faceless, right? Like I can abuse you, I can troll you, but after a while you're immune to it. So I got to do something else. Like I got to show you that I really love you in the greatest way possible. So yeah, very, very symptomatic, emblematic of society in India at large.
And it's worth noting it's not about cricket because you also covered 10,000 fans turning up to SRK, Shah Rukh Khan, his birthday at his house, which is one of the more... sometimes you read a book like this and you're just like, oh, I would love to do that. Like I've done some cool stuff when touring. It has never occurred to me to hang out at the front of SRK's house and talk to the people there. That's a genius idea as a writer. It's more than probably even when you were first told about it, you were like, this would be interesting. It's a lot more than that, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. Because, and also it kind of fell on my lap, Jared, because the India-Sri Lanka game was the next day on the day of his birthday. And we've all seen, at least here in India, we've seen visuals of what that extremely maniacal, you know, birthday celebrations look like, where he comes to the terrace and he waves at people. We've seen it all, like in two dimensions on like screens and stuff like that, right? But like, you really get to know what that fandom looks like for one human being who's constantly portraying other characters. I mean, you have to be there to believe it. And you and I are sports reporters, cricket reporters, right? We've seen fandom. I mean, a lot of this podcast has been about talking about Indian cricket fandom. It pales in comparison when you realize that there are 15, 20,000 people just standing outside one man's house to wave at him and make him feel good on his birthday. And just imagine, just put yourself, if possible, in like Shah Rukh Khan's shoes, right? Like, he's turning a year older, which in, you know, with respect to like Indian cinema and like heroes and stars, the older you get, the probability of you getting like the bigger movies like dwindle quite rapidly. And here's a man who's about hit 60. I think he was 58 in the book in 2023, where he's just got like, you know, seemingly half of Bombay standing outside his house and like screaming at him, right? And there's a guy who does like lover boy roles and like action roles and stuff like that. Like, what has he really done for society apart from, I don't know, being Shah Rukh Khan, right? But I'm also obsessed with the idea, the concept of Shah Rukh Khan, because the greatest character he's ever played is, you know, not the guy from Dilwale Dulhaniya Le Jayenge or Rahul, as you know, the name he often, his character name that he often plays in movies. The greatest character he's ever played is Shah Rukh Khan, right? Like, that's the act he has to put on every day in front of these screaming masses, and he obliges. And how, man? And it's fantastic to see it at, like, you know, very, very, very close proximity.
You were obviously one of the people waving at him at that point.
Yeah, I was one of those people like screaming and watching people cry. And I felt it too, I won't lie.
One of the interesting things, and you mentioned at the start that you know, that India is multitudes of countries within one, right? And you know, both of us have toured around enough to understand this, but people from outside of India don't really understand that. One of the best places to go to understand that is Dharamshala, right? Which is a completely different world. I remember arriving there and the Australian team eating, you'll know the name of the place, but there's like a big pub on the corner on the overlooking the town. What's it called?
McLeod's. Because the place is McLeod Gun, but I know exactly the bar you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. That bar there. And like the Australian
you,
team were in there.
KK being Karthik Krishnaswamy, the three of us had a drink on that very tour in 2017.
I was going to say, of course, I forgot that. But I remember being there when the Australian team came through and like they just didn't get hassled. And another day when the Australian team were walking around and they didn't get hassled. And then the Indian team came in to have they had like a private room at the back. But again, it was quite casual. And I've been in other places in India where the Indian teams turn up and it's like, that's the end of the world. Like, you know, we'll need...
Yeah.
Dharamshala is so different to the rest of India. And I don't know if everyone really understands just how different it is.
Yeah. I mean, so it's also, you know, in the lap of the Himalayas, just in the, like, below the Dholadhar range. And the place was where the Dalai Lama moved with about 5,000 refugees when Lhasa was overrun by the Chinese in 1960. So it also became like a spiritual place with quieter Indians in the Himachalis or people from the hills living around there. And, you know, the infrastructure is not great. This is like crazy terrain and like a real like mountain area. Where people from the plains don't often visit. And then Anurag Thakur, who was born to the chief minister of Himachal Pradesh, kind of starts funneling a crazy amount of cricket there from the turn of the century. including the 2016 T20 World Cup. But I don't think India played too many matches over there. But now comes 2023, and like, you know, they've given up, they've allotted a match to like many different centers, and they did not give one to Mohali, which is an institution which kind of hosted the semi-final of the two previous 50-over World Cups that India was a part of with two other countries. And it did the semi-final, right? And this time it got nothing at all because of, the political situation in this country. And Anurag Thakur is very much part of the political establishment. So with Mohali, which is just on the plains below the hills, not having a cricket match, and Dharamshala getting an India match, ensured like the entire plains of Punjab kind of like drained out and tried to drive up the hills and completely tested the infrastructure there, right? Like, because there's nothing. It's just one road. You can't build flyovers there. I mean, it's steep. It gets to like 70 degrees at points. So these guys with their big sedans and SUVs and like, you know, the honking madness, like all of them with like stalled vehicles and burnt clutch plates, like choking up the place. There was like an 8-hour jam for like a road that should take like 5 minutes, all because, you know, Anurag Thakur wanted to like get cricket, like the big match over there, like the flagship match over there. And it's crazy because Himachal Pradesh, we haven't had any cricketers from there, like literally one who I speak to in the book too, well, in Rishi Dhawan.
That's not true. Anurag Thakur actually played first class cricket so that he could, in case they ever brought in a ruling that says non-cricketers couldn't run cricket. But that's a different conversation.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so there's cricketer Anurag Thakur and there's also cricketer Rishi Dhawan who actually went on to play for India. He played two games. But can you imagine a state that's had so much focus on it with the development of the HPCA stadium and all the resources that are kind of being like shoved that way, they've produced one guy, right? And yet now it's become like one of the major cricketing venues. And yes, that fantastic Dauladhar in the background makes it a good venue to watch cricket in, but it doesn't have the infrastructure to get all those mad, manic Indian fans to there and back over and over again. And yet, every time Australia come touring or England come touring, you have a test match there, right? So,
it's become the sort of thing that it's so popular now for that area, isn't it? Like, so many Australian and English fans, and especially English fans who are most likely to travel, they want to go there. And it's a magical place. Forget the cricket. It just is a magical place. If you know, that tour that you're talking about, when I was there, we went up to the top of the up to the Trion, and also with all the monks and everything in the center of town, and you know, it's a ridiculous place. So I can understand that. That's like one of the less colonial places because of the monks and the immigration and everything. I want to get to one of the most colonial places that you talk about in the book, which is Koshi's, which is a, what would you call it? I think it's called a cafe. It's probably more of a pub, which is, it's not far from Chittaswamy. I'm pretty sure I've walked there from Chittaswamy, but it's what, half an hour walk, 20 minutes? Yeah. It's not that far.
2 minutes walk.
Is it closer? I might have come out of the wrong gate, but it's around there. I know it's in that area.
Or it might have taken you a while to cross the road, like to cross MG Road, but that's the only road that divides Koshi's from Chittaswamy.
That's true. Why did you write about Koshi's? I know that in cricket writing, it's kind of, would I say famous? If you're an overseas journalist, you're told you have to go to Koshi's.
And that is why Australia decided to drop Shane Keith Warne. Cricket is a game of strategy, of picking the right players for the right moment, or playing the right shots at the right ball. And Hit Wicket captures that perfectly. In Hit Wicket, you're not just picking a team, you're collecting cricket legends, expanding your squad with each new addition. The more players you have, the more options you have to dominate in any situation. And then comes the real challenge, picking your playing 11. Who are your opener, run machine, and Mr. 360? Do you stack your top order with aggressive batters, or do you build a solid foundation? And what about your bowling attack? Do you go with pace, spin, a mixture of both? We've got the Tasmanian Devil, Jimmy, and Boom. The possibility are endless. The beauty of Hit Wicket is that you need to adapt your lineup to your opponent. They can be powerful, balanced, and technical. Each class has an edge over another. It's a tactical dance where you need to anticipate your opponent's moves and exploit their weaknesses. So if you think you've got the strategic mind to build a championship team, download Hit Wicket and prove it.
Yeah. It's very simple. I absolutely love the place, and I just wanted any excuse to start putting in places that I kind of wanted the readers to go to around India, like Gokul's, the pub in Colaba in Bombay, right? Like, I don't think anyone really cares about it. Or if they do, it's a cult thing amongst like college students in Bombay to have like cheap beer and alcohol. And
can I think I've been there.
You've been to Gokul's? I'm sure you've been to Gokul's, man. 100%.
Boy, I'm just looking up. I have been there. The minute you said it, I was like, wait a minute. How is it possible I've been there? I have been there. That was awesome, that place. Is it the place with the really tight ceilings? Like it's kind of packed in?
Yes. With a lot of like wooden benches and there's one AC room, which is the special room where you can barely breathe. It's like the Delhi smog in there, right? Because like people are like chain
smoking.
Away.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen an English cricketer or two in there being a bit silly.
And what's the famous one in on Shakespeare Street in Kolkata? No, it's not Shakespeare Street. But what's the one in Kolkata that
on Park Street? It's called Ollie Pub.
Ollie Pub, yeah. Sorry, we're just going through. Everyone who's not a cricket writer at this stage is just like, just stop talking about random pubs in different cities. But Ollie Pub is the other one.
So random. So that's the thing. So Ollie Pub, Gokul's, Koshi's, these places like institutions, not just for cricket writers and guys like you who are lucky enough to be around here and like, you know, be recommended to go to these places. I also wanted to write about like what they kind of mean to the person on the street, what they mean to the person in that city, and whether they respect a place with like such a strong whiff of like a colonial hangover in there. They're very proud of the fact that, you know, they once served Queen Elizabeth II and, you know, the kind of stuff that even the Brits aren't proud of. But I like that.
It's this, they still wear the old colonial uniforms, the waiters,
yes,
don't they?
The safari suits, the white safari suits.
And like, I haven't been there in, I can't remember the last time I was in Bangalore. It'd probably be 2018, 2019, last time I was there. But people were, but all the waiters are like, not only are they wearing old clothes, they are all like old dudes who come around. And it's like, it really does feel like you have, like I've been to the Mumbai Maidan, no, not Mumbai Maidan, the Mumbai Gymkhana, right? And I was like, this is the most colonial place I've been to. And then I went to Koshi's and I was like, okay, this is the most colonial place I've been. And I live in England, dude. I can go to old English stuff. You wouldn't, as you said, you wouldn't get those sorts of things in England anymore because they'd be like, oh, that's too much.
Yeah, exactly. And you really, it's like a time portal, right? Like you feel like the rest of the city kind of became this idea of modern India. And left like these little time capsules behind, Ollie Pub in Calcutta being one of them. But Koshi's most definitely so. There's something strangely beautiful about it. And that cantonment area of Bangalore, which kind of retains some of the old school charm. People write like reading books around there. One bookshop got famous on Church Street. So they franchised out into three more on the same street, right? Like, where, I mean, we're talking about books, Jared, in India. And like, there's just like this flourishing business of people selling and buying books in brick and mortar places, not off the street.
Oh, I like the street sellers as well. You might, there's another one in Kolkata, which is this huge cafe over, I think it's over two floors. I think it might have even been KK who told me to go. I can't remember. Or Monga. One of them told me to go. And again, it's like this famous place where everyone goes. And everyone had a book and like their tiny little coffee. It's interesting to me that you have so many of these kinds of places that in a city where you might have 20 or 30 million people, you know, coming through that city, but you have these places who end up being like the most important in that area. It's interesting to me as an outsider why, like if you come to London, the most important places in London are generally, once they get really important, are taken over by tourists, right? And the same in Melbourne, the same in Sydney, the same in Cape Town, right? So as a tourist, they're fun to go to, but these aren't really touristy places, right? Like Koshi's who's the famous writer who's always hanging out in Koshi's?
Ramchandra Guha.
Of course. I was trying to remember his name and I was like, I know it's one of the big guys. I was trying to remember who it was. Like, this isn't a place that gets taken over by tourists. They're like real living establishments.
like locals, man, the natives. I mean, they literally pop in there for a lunch and a beer and head out exactly the way it would be in a London or a Cape Town or a Melbourne, right? So, a place like this would have been taken over by the tourists in a London or a Cape Town or a Melbourne. But this is like one of your local pubs down the road, which just happened to become an institution, and it just remained a place for only the locals to visit. So yeah,
no, it's so random. I remember, I can't remember what tour I was on, but one of the times I was in India and we went to Koshi's, and it was like in the corner was obviously these old men who'd been in an argument for the last 15 years on the same topic, right? And then a bunch of like German tourists or something came in behind us, like a family. And you're just like, this is so bizarre, because it's just like, it just, that sort of thing doesn't happen in, you know, Colombo or, you know, or Barbados or whatever. It's so random when you see stuff like that. Final question, really. You're following the team. You're not really writing about the team, certainly not from a book perspective. I'm sure you wrote some articles about them. You've got to justify it to your bosses at a certain point. You're writing about the fans. I was running this network at the time during that World Cup, and we had a huge World Cup, right? And then India lost and all the numbers went down. Not only that, it's the only time ever that we lost subscribers, right?
Oh, wow.
And it was on both channels. So the live channel and the normal channel both went to at first we thought it was an algorithm glitch, because they're like, that can't be. And then we just realized so many people were so upset that India had lost. Nice. You're covering the fans. How is this for you?
Yeah, but again, it also allowed me to see, because of just how great that campaign was all the way right on until the end, right? Like it allowed me, of course, I saw like the craze and the passion and, you know, the absolute love for the game while this team was just like trouncing oppositions for fun. But it also allowed me to see, and a lot of Indians to see, what it's like after we lose, and after we lose at such a crucial stage. Because in Ahmedabad, which was notorious right through the World Cup, I mean, in the India-Pakistan game, they wouldn't applaud for the Pakistanis. And it got weird because, you know, as Mickey Arthur said, it almost felt like a bilateral game with no dil-dil Pakistan coming off the speakers. It was very strange. But at a time when you need fan support, the one time you need, like, you know, Virat Kohli's always egging people on. There's a reason why, like, players like the fans right, behind their backs, right? When we needed them the most, when Travis Head was going for it, but it was still a little dicey, you know, at 40 for 3 or whatever, fans started leaving once they realized that India wasn't going to win this game, right? And we started watching it from the press box, and we started noticing, like, you know, vast swathes, like, just clearing out. And again, it tells you a lot about fandom, cricket fandom in this country. And it's something that, you know, I'm not glad that India lost that World Cup. I really thought that was a team that deserved to win it. I mean, it's possibly the best team to not win a particular edition. Better than South Africa 99, better than Brazil 1998, going cross sport. We were better than all of that, the way we played the first 10 games. But the loss, at least as a writer, it showed me the other side of the fans. And that's important to at least to witness it.
So the headline from this podcast is Aditya happy India lost for extra writing material. That's what I'm seeing here.
I think people might start, sending the book back to the publishing house.
it's interesting, though, because it was... should have been a great story, India losing, but because everyone turned away, it's a hard, like, if you write this exact same book and India's won, you're probably selling double to triple the amount of books. But as a writer, this is a better story, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. I mean, it's Shakespeare and Node, like a tragic ending is always great to read and write, I suppose, or witness. No, that's not how it works, I suppose. Had India won, yes. But again, I mean, like, I would have just seen fans in the same uniform, in the same cloth that they wore, like, from the beginning to the end, which is happiness.
Yes.
This cloak of you know, like, you know, despairing, like, just like outright, you know, heart clenching is also what we got to see because of this. But like I said, your podcast, or sorry, your show just lost people. You know, here they would literally start sending the book back if that's your headline for this show.
Yeah, which is what I'm going to do to see how many of your books we can get pulped in this. Thank you very much. And just to remind everyone, the name of the book is?
It's Gully Gully, Travels Around India During the 2023 World Cup. But you can just search for Gully Gully on Amazon and in brick and mortar stores. Yeah, it's available everywhere.
Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
My God, thank you so much, Jared. It means a lot. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.